Now Micah Miller trying to spring a pass ahead. Nobody in front of Jack Paling. Moves on with a blast and scores! Jack Paling with the
hit. We aren't giving up on chances, and we just got to bottom line execute.
Waits. Passes in front. Great save, Paluzzi, as she robs a Gopher in front of her. And that was number 8, Kippen Keller, on the grade A opportunity.
For me as a coach, that's the kind of D you're always looking for, because they don't grow on trees for sure, and he's done a really good job being a captain of a really young team this year.
It's a really cool thing to see for them to really appreciate what I've done on and off the ice.
To the far half wall, Jack Paling trying to play it into the corner. Now Paling turns, squares his body to the slot, sends it up high toward Jack. Sean makes it play through, and they score! Right along the blue line, Nick Paling was in front of the net, and St. Cloud.
Episode number 12 of the Huskies Warming House podcast, coming to you actually from Minnesota. I'm in St. Cloud for the weekend cleaning out things in my apartment, and Nick Maxson's joining us in Apple Valley as usual. Nick, we've got a couple things to cover this week. Of course, Alabama Huntsville, we'll talk about that, as well as the NHL playoff format. But the big one, I suppose, for us in our podcast would have to be the signing of what I believe assistant coach or associate coach, but nonetheless, we'll get your input on that, Nick. But first, how you doing?
It's Saturday. It's finally started to warm up for a little bit. It actually feels humid. You know, it's strange because Minnesota weather never fails us on Memorial Day. I swear that Minnesota will plan the forecast a week. It'll say it'll be sunny, it'll be pleasant, everybody goes to their cabins, and then all of a sudden it rains two-thirds of the weekend. And here we are, we've had scattered showers, they're expected to be a washout on Sunday, and then more chance of rain on Monday. So for those who are looking to go out, go fishing, maybe get the boat in the water, you can, but it's just going to be really wet. So but other than that, I'm feeling pretty good.
Yeah, it's definitely, it seems like one of those things where the best moments in terms of weather are things that you just kind of do spur of the moment. But I mean, anytime you plan anything, outdoor wedding, whatever it is, I mean, you just kind of seem destined to be kind of screwed over.
I actually have a really funny story about this. So last year I was up with my family at, we rented a cabin in northern Minnesota, just do some fishing. We do a lot of boating activities. Well, I bought 12 ribeyes to cook dinner for, there's about 15 of us. And I was putting the ribeyes on the grill. They've been on for maybe 4 or 5 minutes. I look over the lake, which is facing west, and I just see this wall cloud. Not a little wall cloud, but a just giant storm cloud. And it's coming at us quick. And so I check on my phone, and yeah, it looks pretty menacing. Well, the wind was so strong, it had been at least over 50, 60 miles an hour. I thought the grill, which I should have known better, was on wheels, was locked into place, which it wasn't. The wind was so strong, it actually blew the grill into the grass and then tipped over, spilling all the ribeyes. We had to turn off the gas so it wouldn't explode, and I had to finish the ribeyes on a saucepan inside the kitchen there. So you talk about Minnesota weather screwing over my perfectly cooked grilled ribeyes, so I'm not very happy about that either. Just not good.
But you definitely, I still think your cooking experience went better than almost every college freshman and their ramen noodles, I'd have to say.
People still can screw that up, trust me.
Yeah, it's actually one time when I was an RA my sophomore year of high school, I put in mac and cheese and forgot to put in water, and it about burned down the entire dorm. So. And the smell.
My sister actually did that with Easy Mac, and because what happens is you cake the noodles into the bowl, like it becomes a black, like almost concrete type substance, and you cannot get that out. It's stuck.
It's gross. It's a nasty smell. And I mean, how fitting would that be that the guy who's supposed to be in charge of the building burns down the building? But I'm going back to your original point, it's kind of interesting, those wall clouds. If you've ever had the opportunity, I've only seen it once, where you can see wall clouds when they bring rain and they're coming across a lake and you can see the wall of rain coming towards you. That's a pretty surreal experience too. But hopefully, if anyone listening here is going out trying to have some fun with family on Memorial Day, hopefully you do have better fortunes than past years for Nick and I. But speaking of better fortunes, I know one guy that has really good fortunes if you're talking about St. Cloud State Huskies hockey, I should say. New assistant coach, Nick, I want to fill us in on the details of the new signing for St. Cloud State men's hockey.
Sure. new associate head coach is what his official title will be. Will be Dave Shayak. He's coming from Western Michigan University. Was an associate coach over with Andy Murray and his staff. Has quite the resume when it comes to his involvement in hockey as a player, as a coach. He actually even did some pro scouting with the Toronto Maple Leafs early in his career too. Still was one of the most winningest head coaches in the University of Alaska. Anchorage history from 2005 to 2013, and then certainly again here in the NCHA was pretty pivotal to their success. So at the end of the day, he's a great hire from what we understand from Brett Larson. He will be leading the defensive end of things, coming to the bench, and again, just a really, really, really good player. We reached out to Brett Larson for comments. Unfortunately, didn't quite hear from him as far as a direct comment, but on the St. Cloud State's release, Larson said that he brings a, quote, wealth of hockey experience to the program. His impressive resume and all those fields we described will definitely benefit the program as well as, you know, the players that are there. And he's really looking forward to somebody that's a rival coach and having him on the bench. And, you know, it's interesting, especially in the NCHC. Brett Larson, as an assistant at Duluth, comes to be the head coach at St. Cloud. Now, another assistant coach comes over and stays within the conference. I would imagine too, when you get in this conference and just how good each team is and just the parity, it's hard for really a coach, even if it's really a lateral move for Dave. When you get an opportunity to stay in the same conference but go to a different program, I'd imagine that, you know, if you're in his position, this is an easy take if you're Dave.
It's definitely an easy take, and it's an easy take if you're St. Cloud State as well, knowing that you're going to get a coach who not only can kind of give you the game plan and the rundown of what he saw from the St. Cloud State team last year to make them into a better club, but you already know the conference you're jumping into and you already understand the gauntlet that you're going to be facing night in and night out in this conference. So you've got to really like that interconference mix, if you will. It's kind of makes me think of in the NHL, when you trade players, you try not to trade them within the conference because you know that you're going to see them night in and night out and know what they bring to the table. But in terms of coaching, you'll take that all day. And like you mentioned, a guy that has a pretty impressive resume, spent 4 years in the late 80s and early 90s as a player at Northern Michigan University in the then WCHA, and then coached in the mid 90s into the early 2000s at Northern Michigan when they transitioned through into the CCHA. And then I really like this too as well, has a wealth of head coaching experience from 2005 to 2013 at the University of Alaska Anchorage. I mean, that's no slouch of a time period. That's a lot of time to understand what it's like to be in both of those roles, both as an assistant, a head coach, and an associate coach from 2014 onwards, like you mentioned, at Western Michigan University. So definitely a good signing for the Huskies, and definitely has some big shoes to fill as far as you talk about Mike Gibbons, but nonetheless, he's a pretty good fit and a veteran experience at that.
And I think what's going to be important here is, yes, we know of Mike Gibbons' tenure as a coach, but we also know his role as a recruiter. And if you look at, again, Shayak coming in, not only was he a amateur scout for the Toronto Maple Leafs, he has been an evaluator for USC hockey selection camps the last five seasons from 2015 to 2020. So there's no question in my mind that with that resume, I would imagine that a lot of also that role that Mike Gibbons had as a recruiter for the university, I would imagine with that experience that Dave Shayak is going to overtake that role to be basically the main recruiting voice here for this squad as well.
Yeah, it should be really exciting. And you talk about that, Mike Gibbons, one of the things that he does leave as he exits with, you know, himself in this group is he does leave those intangibles, those how do you relate to the players, how do you get them to buy into what you're doing? Because we all know Brett Larson's a fantastic coach. We all know Mike Gibbons was a fantastic coach. Nick Oliver is a fantastic coach. But it means nothing, no matter how good your teaching is, if they don't trust you as a person, if they don't trust you as a professional, if you can't find a way for them to buy in. And I think, you know, with Dave, it's going to be a really easy transition for these players. He knows what he's looking for out of his team. He knows what the conference expects. You know, he's been in the college hockey and professional realm for a number of years. And, just overall seems like a very fantastic human being and a very nice guy, which I know that's easy to say, but we've met our fair share of coaches in the game of college hockey that, especially with media, are not quote-unquote nice guys, or, you know, they're kind of hard asses when it comes to being a coach, I think of in the NHL, Iron Mike Keenan way back in the day, that kind of style. And sometimes it motivates players. Sometimes that's what players need. And you can bring that in sporadically. But in today's day and age, I think you just get a lot more out of players when they feel that they can approach you and be vulnerable, both as a person and as a player. That just creates growth, not only in the hockey world, but in any professional mindset. So I'm excited to see where this Huskies group goes. And I think Dave's going to be a pivotal piece to that.
I would agree. And we're definitely going to try to reach out to Dave to see if we can't get him to join us in the next couple of weeks as well. We'd certainly love to, you know, hear from him and his thoughts and, of course, his decision to leave a very good program in Western Michigan to come over to St. Cloud State. So hopefully we can get him on the next couple of weeks as well, Noah.
Yeah, you talk about programs, and I think that's a good time for us to transition into a little bit of sadder news when it comes to the college hockey world and programs. Alabama Huntsville, unfortunately, was forced due to budget cuts to cut not only their men's hockey team, but also I believe their men's and women's tennis groups as well for their college sports. The Chargers, as they were aptly named, they've been an independent team since I believe 2011 or 2012 when they tried to join the then CCHA, but were in the CHA for a little bit. But anyway, the program actually had been slated to be cut at the end of that season in 2011-12 with financial issues being the main reason again. But admission to the what will be now defunct WCHA league saved the Chargers for several more seasons until, unfortunately, this year. They're the 12th team to be cut since 1973. The last was Wayne State in 2008. Kind of interesting, Nick, when I was looking at this, before you get a chance to jump in here, I actually looked up the last 11 teams besides Wayne State and Alabama that have been cut. And I got to say, I haven't heard of many of these universities. I'm going to list them off here just to see if you can remember. This is, again, since 1973. Illinois, Chicago, U.S. International, Northern Arizona, Pennsylvania, Kent State, Fairfield, Iona, Ohio. That's not Ohio State, just Ohio. Findlay and St. Louis. That's an interesting mix of teams there. And you know, however way you cut it, though, Nick, it's unfortunate to see the Chargers add to that list.
It is, and I think it's interesting that you bring up the point of the what was going to happen with the WCHA. There's no question. Now, the university in a press release mentioned the COVID-19 pandemic and the financial implications that is presenting to the university, and certainly with, as I would say, every university too, that, you know, there's certainly a lot of budget concerns, and there's still a whole heck of a lot that has to be figured out, both at that university and even for all other universities that are out there. There's just so much that we don't know. And again, with scholarships and funding and, you know, alumni trying to donate, you know, there's so many things and with the states that have to be figured out. And with Alabama Huntsville, it's definitely bigger than that. And you mentioned the WCHA, and you talk about the teams who would make up a different type of league in the next couple of years. I think at the end of the day, the writing was on the wall for the Alabama Huntsville, and it is sad. You know, you talk about how just a couple of weeks ago that we were talking about an addition to another college hockey team, Long Island. No, again, that's not official. They've announced it, but that has not officially been added to the league. There is no head coach. There is no recruiting. So that's still kind of an up in the air type deal. But it was exciting to hear that the game was growing, and even despite some of the challenges that we face in the world today. And this just goes to show you this maybe you call it a reality check that even for a team that is currently established, that the budget implications that they're facing, and no question everybody else is facing, might have some more challenges for some of these programs to survive. And it's just unfortunate that Alabama Huntsville had to come to this decision.
Yeah, and you definitely mentioned it does go much deeper than just looking at the COVID-19 situation. It's something, as previously mentioned, at the end of the 2012 season, they were set to be cut as it was. And that stems from the fact that, I mean, you got to look at where Alabama Huntsville partially is placed in the country in relation to other teams. I mean, you have travel expenses alone that they have to get out and play these teams, especially in the WCHA. You know, they're driving up into Michigan, into Minnesota, into the northern realms of the United States, or maybe even traveling. If you have to go from Alabama to Alaska to play a hockey game, that's a huge jump as far as travel is concerned alone. So it's disappointing to see a program that actually, I believe in 2016, was in the Mariucci Classic against the Minnesota Golden Gophers. So, I mean, they were no slouch of a hockey team. I think there was a stretch in there, too, where they had a couple of NCAA tournament appearances as well. But it's unfortunate to see. They do leave behind, I believe, only two players to ever make it to the National Hockey League out of that program. The first would be Jared Ross, who played in the early 2000s, played for the Philadelphia Flyers for two seasons, parts of two seasons, I should say. And he's the longtime, he's the son of longtime UAH coach Doug Ross, and is the first player born and trained in the state of Alabama to play in the NHL. So kind of an interesting tidbit there. Love to see kind of that hometown prospect from these unknown places. And then the other one, which a lot of NHL fans should be very familiar with, is Cam Talbot for three seasons from 2011 to 2010, played there and is currently a member of the Calgary Flames and has had a pretty extensive career with the Rangers, Oilers, and Flames. So, yeah, very unfortunate for this program. They kind of had some sweet jerseys, I'm not going to lie. They had the black and blue jerseys with kind of the silver trim, but nonetheless, we won't see the Chargers in a uniform anytime soon.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Certainly shows that, you know, when times like this, and, you know, it's nobody's fault, and there's always going to be a what-if question, Noah. That is, when the new league forms, and again, you know, we're speculating it's going to be called the CCHA or something like that, where both the Alaska teams and Alabama Huntsville were essentially going to be kind of kicked out, if you want to call it. The travel concerns alone was one big thing. I can't even imagine what the budget might be. And then you talk about recruiting. How does a college like Alabama Huntsville recruit when you don't have the resources? I mean, you talk about that type of state. You could always compare it to Arizona State, but Arizona State's a different beast. It's a Division I school with certainly some established big programs that are, you know, besides hockey with their football, basketball, and so on. So there's certainly some resources there, and they just have also a brand and a name recognition that can entice folks and, you know, some of their academic programs. But Alabama Huntsville certainly, you know, not to say that they're less than that, but not up to those resources that Arizona State has. So it's unfortunate, and it's too bad that they're in this predicament. But for me, and if I'm being honest, and I think if you're being honest too, and I don't want to speak for you, but we may have been looking at this regardless of whether it was COVID-19 or whether this new league formed. It seemed to have a lot of writing going this way, and it is unfortunate. And I just wish there was a way to, you know, to make the world better and to keep hockey growing. But at the end of the day, it's an unfortunate situation, and we certainly wish that the coaching staff, who I forget the name of the head coach of that squad, but I know that from watching his interviews and from, you know, just times that I've seen his reports, was incredibly passionate and worked his tail off to try to keep that program alive, and really had a passion for the game and get a feel for the players and, you know, where they're going to end up. So is there, you know, are they going to transfer out, or, you know, what's, is their hockey futures done? So a lot of impact from this decision, no question. And, you know, again, the university is making tough decisions, and, you know, decisions that they know that they have to make. And it's just not a fun situation. St. Cloud State was in a similar situation just this last fall with the football program making the biggest news, of course. So at the end of the day, you know, again, just unfortunate times here for the college athletics.
Yeah, St. Cloud football, and I believe golf was the other sport that was in that list as well. And actually, one more point there, too, I believe, as you had mentioned, with the league disbanding, the two Alaska teams being part of that group that was kicked out, I think that Alabama Huntsville had actually mentioned in a memo that when the league was disbanding, they actually had no idea that it was coming, too. And I think that that's important to bring up, just for the fact that going forward, I hope that this situation, especially with COVID, understands that we need to have our facts straight, and we need to make sure that we have a little bit of transparency when we go through this. Because yes, it's easy to say on paper, well, here's this program and they're part of this division and they do X, Y, and Z. Well, it's more than that. You've got people who are invested in it. You've got players that are invested in it. And you just have to make sure that you understand that even though it's a business, it's more than that.
And it's interesting, I know I mentioned Arizona State, and I'm just thinking out loud, but they're still an independent team. And you talk about the resources, but at the end of the day, I wonder what Arizona State's going to do if they were facing similar budget constraints. No question, as we discussed, they have much better access to resources than, say, Alabama Huntsville does. But they don't really have like a conference schedule. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk amongst not just hockey programs, but football and basketball I know the NSIC, as far as St. Cloud State's concerned, are talking about having conference-only games to try to, again, reduce player, coach, and also fan risk as a return-to-play scenario. But at the end of the day, what's Arizona State going to do? So they don't have a conference that they have, and no question, when they travel, you talk about a team that has to travel just about as much, if not more, than Alabama Huntsville does. I wonder what their schedule and their season may look like. So we may actually get a really good look of, you know, Arizona State, and they could be sort of that, what if Alabama Huntsville is still around, what some of the challenges may have been facing. So we're going to have to watch Arizona State this year to see exactly how they're handling this situation too. And that's also assuming that things start on time and without any sort of disposition.
Yeah, definitely. And like you mentioned, Long Island University as well, just they're not exactly resource heavy as well. So even just getting a startup in this day and age is going to be difficult as well. But hopefully we find the support we need for all of these programs, both professional, college, and otherwise, because the situation, you know, it's unprecedented. And we just want the game of hockey around. We just want the game of hockey to return. And speaking of professional hockey returning, we might have that as the NHL does near a little bit of a 24-team playoff format, but we don't really want to use the term playoff format, Nick, because we're not quite sure what it actually is going to be. More like a return-to-play format, but nonetheless, we broke it down in our last episode with some matchups that we could see, and I believe four of those have changed. Nick, maybe fill us in on a little bit of information as to why the reasoning for those matchups changing, and if those matchups are even going to happen at all.
So we were going off in speculation last week, and it was still fun. I mean, it was still fun to kind of go through. But the one thing we certainly had expressed was this was still not set in stone. And all the reporters out there are calling this, and it's being called like a 24-team playoff bracket. And in reality, it's a 24-team return to play format. Because what the NHL hasn't really decided yet is it going to be a 24-team playoff bracket, or is there going to be a round robin where that first play-in round is technically a round robin tournament where still the top four teams in each conference, it's not going to be by division anymore, would have a chance to even kind of fight each other for a better chance of a higher seed. So then would it still be a 16-team technical playoff bracket? There's still so many things that have yet to be finalized. But the one thing we do know is that whatever the reason is, there's going to be 24 teams that will return to play, and seven teams who are below that bubble. Essentially, their season is done. And as we discussed before, there is talk about those seven teams essentially having some sort of a lock or sort of a playoff lottery where they may just be locked in their places. Maybe the lottery is just thrown and done with. Again, still some things they have to sort out. But at the end of the day, yes, at this point, the projections are, since it's not going by division but by conference, and I think the one matchup we'll just hit on just because it affects most of our listeners is the Minnesota Wild, instead of playing Nashville, would, according to this model, would be playing the Vancouver Canucks. And that is indeed the matchup. That one certainly favors the Canucks, I think. But again, that's also assuming that there is no play beforehand. I mean, you talk about getting back into game action and competitiveness. There's still so many things to sort out. All that's really been agreed on is if we return to play, and that's still an if. We still don't know. We haven't actually agreed to come back yet, but if they do, there'll be 24 teams involved at some capacity yet in what format, we still don't know.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the Minnesota Wild would flip-flop, and then the Predators would get the Arizona Coyotes in the West. The other ones that changed from when we had talked a little bit, Carolina would actually match up with the New York Rangers instead of Toronto. Toronto would get the Columbus Blue Jackets, and then the Blue Jackets were slated to have the Islanders, who will then have the Florida Panthers. So those three series is kind of flip-flop as well. Don't worry, your Pittsburgh Penguins would still play the Montreal Canadiens. The Canadiens coming in as the 24 seed. A couple of interesting points on this, Nick. First, players have talked about being not in favor of the best of three format, which would have pitted teams like Pittsburgh against Montreal or teams like Edmonton against Chicago, where Carey Price or Patrick Kane could be a factor enough to at least take over a game or two and really grab hold of that three-game series. But when you talk about return to play versus playoffs, I read an interesting article this morning, Nick, and I apologize, I can't remember where it was from, but they talked about how, it actually might have been in the comments section, and a lot of people were talking about how back in the early 80s or whatever it was, 16 teams made the playoffs, as they do now, but there was only, 22, 23, 24 teams in the entire league. Well, now we've added more teams, but we haven't expanded the playoff bracket. And there's a lot of talk about how this playoff series might end with an asterisk if someone wins the quote-unquote COVID Stanley Cup, if you will. But I think it's an interesting argument to talk about. Maybe it's not 24 teams, but do we expand the playoff field in general as the league continues, just because of the fact that we're about to add our 32nd team with Seattle? And does it give it an opportunity, maybe even if you have some play-in rounds, to understand that some of these teams that are bubble teams are not separated by more than a handful of points, and they're all good hockey teams?
I think there's a couple of things there. First of all, the asterisk by the COVID, I think, is a load of crap, because, and here's why I say that.
Agree with you entirely.
The 2012 season, which was shortened by the player lockout, you don't have an asterisk by the Los Angeles Kings there. So to me, it's like, if you're going to have an asterisk, well, why? That was a totally controllable situation with the lockout and the CBA negotiations. Again, both sides had a lot to play for, a lot to negotiate for in terms of the contractual situation. But if we're not going to have an asterisk there, then I don't understand why you would have an asterisk here. But I do agree with you in the fact that, is there an opportunity to expand the playoff field? And I think there is. What that might look like, I would actually vote for a 12-team per conference type format, because at the end of the day, we've been talking about ways to grow the game and to grow the interest. And there's nothing, you and I have watched hockey all of our life. We played hockey all our life. Whether we're good at actually playing hockey, that's, I mean, to ourselves in the mirror, we're a 59 goal scorer, and we win the Stanley Cup Game 7 overtime goal every time. To those, there's a reason why we're sitting behind the microphone. At the end of the day, I think there's nothing like playoff hockey. There isn't. It's a whole different breed. It's faster. It's chippier. It's more physical. And it is more emotionally involved. And that's the hockey that when you start the regular season in October, there's this giant weight in the summer months. And it's so good to have it back. But the minute you flip to mid-April, when the regular season ends and these meaningful games come to play, the game is just different. And it's so much fun to watch. And the NHL has tried with some different storylines. I know NBC has tried to do this with folks I know in St. Louis. They try to highlight a couple people who have never watched hockey before, and then they get a glimpse of it, and all of a sudden they're addicted to it. I mean, you just can't get enough of it. And to me, I think it is an appropriate time to look at, well, if you're going to expand the game, expand the playoff format, get more teams involved in that emotion, in that passion. And especially with what just happened last year, again, a pivotal penalty call. I'm talking about Vegas and San Jose that turned essentially a series which would have maybe gone one way or another to a four-goal swing in less than 6 minutes. That's the kind of controversy, the type of drama that this game is known for. And the more teams you can put into it, and you know how we actually want to accomplish this is up for debate. But I think you do need to include more teams. And especially as you mentioned, we're now up to 32 teams. I think the conversation is now, and this maybe could be a test market for that. So I think it's an opportunity to test and to grow some exposure again.
And it might be something that, you know, it's not a massive overhaul too. Like I think about, you know, 24 teams might be a little bit much, I don't know, but you could easily pull 20 teams and it would relatively look simple. You think about it, we already have, you know, two wild cards per round, you know, per conference, I should say. So you have two in the West, two in the East, not in relation to divisions. They're just two wild cards. Well, add another two wild cards on either end of that and have them do a little play-in series, you know, to fill out those two seeds who will then jump into the regular playoff format as we know. Something like that.
And you know what you could do? Because you remember when Seattle joins the NHL, they go to the Pacific Division. Also what happens, Arizona actually moves to the Central. So you have 8 and 8 and 8 and 8 for each division. Essentially, the way it's set up now is you have like a wild card battle. You have a top three. You could go to a top four if you wanted to in each conference or each division. And then you could have, again, those same two wild card spots for 9 and 10 if you want to go for the conference. So effectively, you could keep a similar format if you want to, but just add that top four that would, you know, get a bye or however you want to do it. Or, you know, again, you know, I haven't really thought about it that much, but I think the timing is right to expand it. Again, 2024 teams, I think that's up for a healthy debate, but I think the game does need to expand the playoffs. Again, the NFL just did the same thing, and there's no question the power of that game. And even they are trying to include more teams in the postseason bath because they know it just reeks of fan engagement. fans want to see playoffs. They want to see games that matter. And I think the NHL is ripe with the expansion of the league and certainly with the expansion of the talent that's in the league. It's ripe to be expanded.
Yep. The biggest challenge, like you mentioned, because I was thinking about your point a little bit too, and it's a great idea in principle. The only challenge that you have is if you have four teams from the Pacific and four teams from the Central that do make it in, you have eight teams, but then you also have another two teams that would make it in, and it all depends how you want to slot those last two teams, because you have 5 and 5 essentially for playoff series. So does somebody get a bye, that sort of thing? So there's a lot of things.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's a lot
I would say what you would do is the conference number one would get a bye. Okay. That's what I would say. And I think, you know, we talked about like the regular season point schedule and does it really get you much? There's a debate of what is it still 2-1 or in zero? Should there be 3 points of regulation win and, you know, some of that that stairway sort of sequential points where you maybe only get 2 as an overtime win instead of the full 3. That's, you know, a whole different rabbit hole that we can go down. But again, you talk about trying to reward a team without having to change a point format. Maybe you give the conference regular season winner a first round bye. And go from there. But again, you know, this is a healthy discussion I think the league needs to have.
It's good. And so I'm gonna rebuttal your point for the bye just a little bit here. The only thing that I could see being really difficult, and I kind of think about what the Tampa Bay Lightning went through last year, where they had a tough stretch of about a week and a half that unfortunately cost them everything. Do you want to be the Tampa Bay Lightning where you finish with 127 points, but then you're sitting on your ass for a week while you watch other teams play? So there's another challenge too, where if you're red hot moving into the playoffs, will it ruin your
moment? Play?
Right.
Yeah, you want
right.
to play. And that's a valid point. And maybe that's where you take the two wild card teams and maybe you do. Oh, geez, I don't know. That's a great point. That's a great point. It would almost force your hand to do like, you would almost have to do 24 teams at that point if you're trying to keep the brackets simplified. And again, I think your point's well valid. Now, and maybe that is the challenge, and again, we're thinking out loud here,
right,
of the NHL is how do you expand it without really forcing teams, as you mentioned, that you want to, it's like a goalie mentality, right? You get hot, you want to keep playing. And for the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, again, stranger things have happened, but I think that's something that will have to be negotiated. And certainly they're up for a CBA coming up here in just a couple of years. So I think, you know, if they're going to do a playoff structure, this is a good time to try it. And I would imagine if it works or if maybe there's some pushback, maybe you could tweak it. But this is actually a really good opportunity for the league to see if it works, to see if the teams like it. And again, they're going to have teams that are going to have a bye if this format that we keep hearing about actually takes place. And you will have to see, you know, again, it would be what St. Louis and Las Vegas for the Western Conference, I believe, and that would have those buys, the part of that first four. So we can get feedback for them that says, hey, you know, yeah, you sat around for, and I believe, Noah, to correct you, I believe they're proposing a best of 5 in that play-in round, not a best of 3.
Yes, that's correct. Correct. They called it originally a best of 3 because each grouping is still like a grouping of 3. So it's a best of 5 series for the first round, but it's a best of 3 grouping. Yeah, I don't know.
Gotcha.
I don't know why people can't be just straightforward with things. Wouldn't that just be easy?
Right.
But I'm
that made too much sense.
So going back to the proposal that I had, just because, you know, I'm better than you and that sort of thing. No, but my thought with that was, you still have your 3 teams in the Pacific, 3 teams in the Central, but now you have 4 teams in the wildcard spots that will play each other, 1 vs. 4, 2 vs. 3, to fill in those last 2 wildcard spots, and then you do the playoffs as normal. So you still have 20 teams, you're rewarding those bubble teams for getting within a point or two, but at the end of the day, you're still having the playoffs that are quote-unquote normal. Now, I'm not a fan of the playoff system normally in general because, you know, maybe you just expand it where 1 plays 10, 2 plays 9, and so on and so forth. But then the problem is you have these groupings of 5. You know, you need groupings of 2, 4, 6, or 8, just some way that you can whittle them down. Or I guess it'd be 2, 4, and 8. You know, you have to whittle them down to where teams aren't stagnant in some way. So I don't know how you really do it, but at the end of the day, man, more playoff hockey, I'll take it.
And to your point, because even with that format that you prescribed, and I don't mind that format, but you're still having 6 teams stay idle, because if you're trying to have the 4 wildcard teams play each other I don't think hockey, with the way the playoffs are, for those who are the purists, would want to do like a winner-take-all one-game play-in between two wildcard teams. Hockey, in terms of its playoff, has always been best of seven. It needs to be a long, hard-fought series. So I don't know if they would change that tactic. And again, that's the problem with expanding the playoffs is, again, how do you get the numbers to line up to keep it so that way you're not having teams sit around? And who knows, maybe we'll get to this where maybe those top teams actually would prefer to have, because you talk about injuries, you talk about resting, we talk about how especially that first round is brutal, having your body beat around and sometimes sitting around. Yeah, you talk about momentum, but just having to wait a week, you're resting up, you're getting healthy, you're just maybe doing light practices while the other team that you might face is getting beat to death on the ice for up to seven games. So maybe that's an advantage, and maybe you can propose it like that. It says, hey, yeah, you might gonna sit around a little bit, maybe you're playing really good hockey, but a team that's going to be coming into you, they're going to be probably pretty tired. They're, you know, probably going to be playing a little bit hurt, and maybe that's the advantage that you can pitch if you're going to go that route. Again, that's just one of many factors. You could pitch it that way, but again, what do the players, what do the teams want? And again, that's still up for debate.
Did you just pull reverse psychology on me? I think you did.
I think I did. That's what happens when you're on the earth for 10 more years than you are.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything for that. That's a valid point, but it's going to be something that the NHL, it's going to have to be a process. Like you mentioned, the CBA isn't for a couple of years. It's something that we have a relevant opportunity and a very unique opportunity that I don't think we would ever have. It could change the course of NHL hockey history as we know it. But we also have to be a little bit methodical about it. And I think the NHL will do its due diligence. Hopefully all these leagues do their due diligence. An interesting one, the MLB, talking about them, they're in a bit of a more different situation as far as they get to start their season and finish their season kind of in the way that they want to, versus the leagues like the NHL and NBA trying to essentially salvage their seasons. But an interesting note, speaking of MLB, that I wanted to mention, just because it does involve our Minnesota Twins, is that down in Florida, their affiliate, the Pensacola Blue Wahoos, have actually listed that their minor league baseball stadium is available for parties of 10 or less to rent for $1,500 a night to come in and do the batting cages. There's a golf course that's next to the thing like that too. And I kind of thought about that in the sense of, it's kind of a good idea to maybe just generate a little bit of money for these teams, these minor league teams that don't maybe have enough cash coming in that they would expect for filling the seats. As we noted in earlier episodes, the AHL has officially disbanded their season. So I also got to think about, while we're in this process of trying to get professional leagues and sports to get going in general, how do we take care of the little guys as well that are so vital to these organizations as well? Nick, sorry, I know you had a point there, but I started rolling and I think I was kind of in deep.
There's
there.
No stopping the Noah train when it gets rolling. So, but you know, to your point, if it was $1,500 for Target Field, I'd take it. The problem is that the economy, and I don't want to get into a debate, economy versus health, but we know the economy isn't right now. The problem I have is, who has got $1,500 in disposable income that would, you know, be able to afford that? You know, like, there's very few that can. So I like the idea, but I just don't know how much really they're going to generate with that, given the state of the economy.
Although,
and again, I could be wrong.
Although
the economies,
if you bring 10 people in that group, it's $150 per person. It's not totally unreasonable, but you got to bring 10 people.
Right. And the other thing is too, is, you know, it's consumer confidence too. So it's, you know, can I spend the $150? Because, you know, again, the problem with this whole situation with COVID-19 is that it changes. Nobody knows when the end is going to be. So some families, again, with kids or whatnot, might be looking, and even if they can't afford the $150, they may look at it and go, do I really want to give this away at $150, or would I need this maybe in a couple of months when, if this thing doesn't turn around? Again, there's states that are opening up and, you know, we're seeing positive progress, and that's a good thing. The problem is we don't know health-wise if we're going to be back to square one. Are we going to get a second wave? I certainly hope not. I hope that we're, you know, kind of over the hill and we're only looking down the hill versus coming back up again. But again, we just don't know. There's still, you know, not really a proven medication that really helps for everybody. There's no vaccine, and that could be months away, if not over a year away. And so again, you know, I just question the consumer confidence point, is, you know, are people thinking ahead to, you know, can I do this now or should I hold on to this? Because we still don't know where the end point is. We're in a tunnel that's dark and we can't see the end of the light. Hoping that's changing soon, of course.
Yeah, definitely. You want to talk about consumer confidence, Nick. I don't know if you have anything else to add, but I do know that speaking of consumer confidence, you definitely want to check us out on iTunes, Podbean, Huskies Warming House Podcast.com. Email us at Huskies Warming House Podcast at Outlook.com. Check us out on Center Ice View and the website put together by Bill Prout, who takes a lot of fantastic photos. He used to be a member of the Center Ice Club that was disbanded in 2013. I think he'd be another guy that might be an interesting guy to have on for a couple minutes on our show. He does a fantastic job to support us, and I definitely want to give him his shout out because he's been really instrumental in getting us out there, especially with our last episode. If you haven't gotten a chance to listen to it, we had head coach of the men's hockey team Brett Larson on last week, and that one got some pretty good reviews from fans. So if you haven't gotten a chance to check it out, please do. But Nick, that's all I got. Anything else interesting in your world that you want to bring up?
My world is kind of dull, honestly. You know,
What's new?
There's not a whole lot new. It's just we're just trying to get through this together. And I think the only one thing I'll bring up is, you know, for the fans who are listening to us, you know, obviously, thank you. We appreciate the support. And all of us, you know, we're hoping that when we look forward to October, October 4th is slated to be the opening night for Huskies hockey against Guelph Storm. Hoping that that stays the course and stays on schedule. But nonetheless, you know, any sort of news that we come up for the Huskies hockey team, we'll certainly try to bring it to you as soon as we can. So make sure you follow us on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is at the Puckscribe. Noah, what's your Twitter handle?
SCSU Hockey 91. And definitely, we could certainly use any sort of listener question, listener feedback, anything that you want to shoot at us. You know, we'll definitely address it. We'll talk about it. We're more than happy to interact with all of you welcome listeners. But
I would love to do a mailbag, honestly, for a listener mailbag, to do a listener led it kind of a segment or even a listener show where we answer a fan's questions to the best of our ability and maybe get some intake on other things. So please, you know, if you have, I think we should try to do that. Maybe, you know, on Twitter or whatnot, maybe try to grab some Huskies fans, try to throw us some questions and we can answer them here in the podcast.
I definitely think at Go Huskies, Wu would probably have about 7 questions on his own, but I really question.
The answers will always be Jeff Finger though. That's the problem.
Exactly. And I also think that I don't know how many of those might be appropriate for our on-air podcast, but nonetheless, we don't know until you send us our questions, so please do that. But I think that's going to do it for us. Episode number 12, Nick Maxson joined me this week. He'll be hosting next week. But for Nick, I'm Noah Grant, and we will see you next week.